Today is Thursday, January 2nd. This is the women's Chumashir. We're up to Bereshit, Perek Yudchet. Okay, Rabotai. Last time that we met, we focused on the unit as a whole, Avraham's prayer unto HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I shared with you Rabbi Kanatopsky's interpretation as to how we see the different type of requests that Abraham made and HaKadosh Baruch Hu's unique response every single time. Just to briefly review, the premise with which Rashi and many operate with is that there were five cities which comprised the Sodom metropolitan area. And each one, when Avraham asked for, if you will find 50 tzaddikim, I will not destroy the city, Avraham is operating on the notion that in order to reform a society that is committed to absolute evil, not only in practice, but in law as well, and that's exactly what happened in Sodom, there were laws that prohibited every citizen from inviting people into their homes as guests. No one is permitted to host anyone as a guest. So it's a society that is cruel, not only by the nature of the people, but the laws of that community itself represent a commitment to evil. So in order to change the very fabric of a people who are committed to act inappropriately, the thinking is that it can never change unless there are 10 people committed to acting appropriately. It can't happen. Therefore, Avraham asked for 50, if there are 50 tzaddikim. That would assume that there are 10 in each city. And then, what is God's response to the question of 50? Vinasati lechol hamakom ba'avuram. I will forgive all of the peoples of Sodom as long as I find 50 people here. Because then I can trust that something might happen. 10 in each city will now have the ability to reform the very character of all five cities. So God says a sweeping statement. I will forgive all of the 50 people, all of the five cities on account of these 50 people. However, if there are only 45, which is Avraham's second request, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not say he will forgive them. He says, Lo Ashchit, Lo Ashchit, I will not destroy the city if I find 45 tzaddikim. The thinking is, if there are 45, it means there are only 9 in each city. 9 in each city cannot necessarily convince the masses to change their mind, to change their perspective. Hence, God says, cannot say, I'm going to forgive them. What does He make a promise? I will not destroy everybody. Lo ashchit. But punishment there will be. I'm going to punish people for acting cruelly, as they have demonstrated over so many years. The next request is 40 and 30. And in those situations, God responds, not that He's going to forgive everybody. He doesn't say, Lo ashchit, I won't destroy. He says, Lo e'eseh, I won't do anything. I'm not going to destroy. I'm not going to forgive. I'm going to wait and see what happens. Why? Because at least a majority of the cities have 10 people. If there are 40, it means that there are 10 tzaddikim in 4 cities, none in the 5th. And if there are 30 tzaddikim, it means there are 3 cities with 10. So once you have 10 people in a given society who are committed to doing, to conduct themselves properly, there is a slight chance that they will have an impact upon the rest of their neighbors, and they will reform their behavior as well. since it's a majority of them, God says, it's a wait and see attitude. Let me see how they conduct themselves over the next couple of weeks, months, and years. If they change, I'll forgive them as well. If not, I won't. The last category of requests is 20 and 10. That means only a minority of the cities have the requisite 10. So God knows they will never have the capacity to reform everybody, and therefore God's response changes to lo ashchit. I'm going to have to administer punishment, because I know that this evil type of behavior is going to continue, because I have no confidence in less than in a majority, in a minority situation, where only one or two cities have the requisite 10, that they are not going to share their influence with the other cities. Hence, I may not destroy the tzaddikim, but I'm going to have to go ahead and punish people. Where did Rashi and the Ramban and everybody else get this notion that less than 10 people cannot accomplish their objective? So Ibn Ezra made a statement, if you remember, based on the halacha of a minyan. Ein davar shebikdusha pachot mi'asara. Nothing that involves elements of sanctity, nothing that involves element of sanctity can be accomplished with less than 10 people. You can't say Baruch Hu, you can't have Kriyat Torah, you can't have Chazarat HaShatz. And the question which is on some of your minds is, what does that have to do with this situation here? And the way the Rav explained it was that the Gemara learns out a minyan for the recitation of Kaddish and Kedusha and Baruch Hu from the Meraglim. How many Meraglim were committed to the plan of the Meraglim? 10. Two of them, Yehoshua and Kalev, were loyal and faithful to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But 10 Meraglim were committed to offering a discouraging report about the capacity of Am Yisrael to enter into Eretz Yisrael. Now, we pointed out, there were several million Jews who had experienced and witnessed Yitzias Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yam Suf, and Ma'amad Har Sinai. Several million Jews who saw divine revelation like no other generation was privileged to see. And when God says, we're going into Israel, into Eretz Canaan, you would expect several million people who have witnessed God's powerful hand in the drama of the Exodus of Mitzrayim, in the splitting of the Yam Suf, in the awarding us of the Torah, that He's capable as well of delivering on His promise to let us go into Israel. And yet 10 people committed to that ideology that you cannot accomplish this objective swayed the minds of several million people. 10 Meraglim. So the halacha believes that if 10 people committed to an idea and a value can influence several million people to be unfaithful to God, we believe that 10 people who are faithful to God can convince hundreds and thousands, if not millions, of others to reform their way of behavior and to sanctify God's presence in this world. So therefore we learn out the requisite 10 for a minyan, specifically from these miraglim who number 10 and cannot and nonetheless were successful in changing the course of history for Am Yisrael. They had to spend another 40 years in the desert until they entered into Eretz Yisrael. That's what we said the last time we met concerning the various steps of Avraham's petition. So what I would like to do now is go back and see some of the commentators, how they react to each step along the way. It's not that they offer a picture in totality the way I just presented it, but they look at each one of Avraham's requests and God's responses independently. So we'll start on page one, shockingly, on page one. It's not numbered after a ball player. Not named after a ball player, because there's not much going on in sports these days. Those of you who follow sports know that. What? Yes. Yes. But as you say, you said a tribute, yes. Yes. I'd like to dedicate today's shiur to Pearl Cohn's granddaughter, who is having a medical procedure, Liana Sima Bastavida Yafe. Our learning should be for a refuah shleima b'mehera, as only HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rofe Chole Amo Yisrael, can accomplish. So if you take page one, on the bottom of the page, is Radak, who makes a comment on the first question that Avraham poses to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Pasuk says, it's Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayigash Avraham Vayomar, Ha'af Tispe Tzadikim Rasha. Don't look any place yet. Just translate the phrase the way the simple pshat reads. Ha'af Tispe. Give me another word for Ha'af Tispe. Give me another word that will explain in Hebrew, simple Hebrew word of the word ha'af.
Ha'im.
What?
Ha'im.
Ha'im. Or another word, as if you're saying, certainly you would not do it. What? Okay. Or hagam. Hagam tispeh tzadikim rasha. You mean to tell me, Rabbeinu Shloilem, you're also going to what? Destroy the righteous together with the wicked ones? How could you possibly do that? Says Radak, the word af is not hagam.
It's evra.
It's evra. Af is also a name, is a description of a characteristic of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What do we say? Charon af. Anger. Exactly. Let's read the Radak. Omar. Hagam ze mi mishpat harisha'im shetichle imahem atzadikim hashochnim imahem. First he explains it, the simple pshat. Hagam ze, is this also in the way you conduct yourself, Rabbeinu Shel Olam? Is that the way you administer justice? By killing the righteous together with the evil ones? The unkelis tirgame ha'af cheima. Ha'af Habirgaz. If you look at Pasuk Chaf Gimel on the left hand side of the page, you have Unkelis on the top of the page.
Rogez.
Rogez. Mazer Rogez. Anger. So Radak. Ratzono Lomar. Imi pnei haka'as sha'atako esal rishaim. Tichle hatzadikim imahem. I know, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, you have a right to be angry. When you see people conduct themselves in such a despicable fashion. But does that mean that when you're angry, you're going to allow it to go uncontrolled? Like so many people, when they're angry, they cannot administer a response in measure. So what happens when a guy is angry that Israel did such a thing? So what did they do? They go ahead and try to kill 50 Israelis or 100. Because when you're angry, you lose a sense of control how to engage in a measured response. Asks Avraham to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you mean to tell me, you too, that when you're angry, they're going to allow Rishaim to be killed, Tzadikim to be killed together with Rishaim? I can't believe that you, the Ribono Shel Olam, cannot control your anger and administer punishment only upon those who deserve to be punished. So it's an interesting read on the word ha'af. And we know that because Unkelis used the words habirgaz. Rogez means angry, anger. And Unkelis knew how to translate the word ha'af as hagam as well. So that's point number one, that he's challenging HaKadosh Baruch Hu based on the fact that he knows that he happens to be very angry at this particular moment. Very angry at this particular moment. Yeah. Then if you go for a second to page number 2, yeah. So again, we'll start on the left-hand side with the Radak. And he asks, I'll just read the phrase, and you tell me what in the phrase is seemingly superfluous so that Radak will react. Again, the rule of Pinky is, one never finds a commentary on the Chumash unless there is a difficulty with the text. If there is no difficulty, they don't say anything. Rashi, Radak, the Ramban never comment on every single word of the Chumash. If there is a textual or word that is difficult or superfluous, that triggers their commentary. So look at the phrase, Ulai yesh chamishim tzadikim betoch ha'ir. What words in that phrase, what's betoch ha'ir mean? Obviously, you don't even have to say by ear. He knows he's talking to him about Sdom. Ulai yesham chamishim tzadikim. Obviously, it's betoch ha'ir, in the middle of the city. Why stipulate betoch ha'ir? So Radak has two suggestions. Number one, yesh lefaresh betoch ha'ir bitoch Sdom. I told you that the 50 were divided up equally amongst what? The five cities. Says Radak, he didn't say it, but I am telling you this is what he has in mind. He knows that there is such a midrash, but that's not what the text says. Avram is a big mispalel for Sdom. So what is he asking? If there are 50 within the city of Sdom, will you destroy? So then, E.F. Shah, now he writes, the im b'Sdom, line 3, Shehi ha-gidola yimatzu chamishim tzadikim, if I find what? 50 tzadikim in the city of Sdom, E.F. Shah shelo yimatzu tzadikim gamkein b'shar he'arim. It's impossible that every single righteous person happened to what? Decide to live in Sdom. That doesn't happen. Not every righteous person lives in Teaneck, right? Some live in Beugenfield. Some live someplace else, in New Milford. You know, some even live in Englewood. So all of these don't necessarily mean, so if you find righteous people here, in all probability you'll find some righteous people elsewhere. And as a result, this whole notion about 5 or 10 in each city, that you don't have to come to that midrashic interpretation. Just read the text simply. And how does he feel that the text pshat is being communicated? Because it emphasized betoch ha'ir, in the city. Which the city? The capital, the main city, which is the city of Sdom. Yeah. So that's something that no one else has necessarily stated. If you take a look to the right, you have the Ramban, and I want to just read for a second a couple of psukim to get the flavor of what's bothering the Ramban. So I'm going to read together, starting with Pasuk Chavav, and then reading a couple of psukim. Vayomer Hashem, im emtza b'stom chamishim tzadikim etoch ha'ir, what are you going to do? God responds, V'nasati l'chol ha'makom b'avuram. I'll forgive everybody. Very nice. Vaya'an Avraham vayomar, hineina ho'alti lidaber. I'm just getting started Rabbeinu Shalayla. El Adonai, Ve'anochi afa ve'efer, I'm nothing but dust and ashes. Ulai yachsurun chamishim hatzadikim chamisha. Maybe there will be five less, only 45. So God responded whatever he responded. Then in Chavtet, Vayosef od ledaber elav vayomar. He continues to pray. And then in Lamed, Vayomer, Al no yichar ladunai va'adabera. Please, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, don't be angry at me if I continue to speak. And then, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayomer, Hinei naho alti ledaber. I'm just getting started. Getting started. And then in Pasuk Lamed Bet, Vayomer, Al no yichar ladunai va'adabra achapam. Don't get angry at me if I have one more thing to say. Having read those five psukim, tell me what do you think the Ramban is going to be asking from a textual point of view. From a textual point of view. What could it have said without missing a beat in what's happening in Avraham's tefillah? How could we have sequenced all of those things achad shtayim? Just tell me what would have said.
You could have had one pasuk with all the different numbers.
Good, or if you wanted to have two pasukim or five pasukim, all it would say is Ulai yimatzun sham chamishem va'arba'a. Chamisha va'arba'im. Ulai yimatzun sham arba'im. Why do I need this introduction every single time that Abraham is going to continue if he's standing here in the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam? And he has the Rabbanu Shalom's ear and attention. Why does he need another introduction? Just say, Rabbanu Shalom. If there are 50, what would you do? If there are 45, what would you do? If there are 40, 30, 20, and 10, and we would get the entire picture. Why is it necessary to have an introductory phrase for each time that he opens up his mouth? Kacha Sho'el HaRamban. Let's read it inside. Let's read it inside on page 2 on the right hand side. Va'ani Tama. I am perplexed. I find it difficult. Im Kain Ma HaTefillah VaHatechina HaZot Ashahaya Mitchanein Kol Pam V'Pam Al Yichar Ladonai Hinei noho alti. What does he need all of these introductions for? You think, what's he accomplishing by telling HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm just getting started? What's he accomplishing by saying, Rabbeinu Shalom, I'm still here to talk to you? It's obvious. V'halo v'hin haloi ra'ui ha'hu shiyu arba'im Matzilin Arba. Then he goes, a second question. You know what? If you assume that there are five cities, which the Ramban does, as Rashi does, if you assume that there are 10 in each city, that's why he starts off with 50. Good. Without taking BC calculus, I can now figure out, you know what? If there are only 40 people, how many cities have the 10? 4. And if there are 30, how many? 3. So the Rabbeinu Shalom can figure out what's running through his mind without going through this whole song and dance. What happens to his... Again, the Ramban does not note what I told you 2 weeks ago. He does not note that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's answer is very different each time. That sometimes it says lo ashkif, sometimes it says lo eseh, once it says v'nasati l'chol ha-makom. The Ramban does not take note of that. So he believes it's just a simple request. Rabbi Nisham, 55 cities, 10 in each city, will you forgive? Yes. Well, if there are 40, he figured, okay, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will forgive the 4 cities, and the fifth one he'll destroy. If there are 30, he'll destroy 2 cities and spare 3. So what, in addition to why do I need the introductory remarks, why do I have to mention the whole thing? anybody could have figured this out, that once God gives his approval to saving all five based on 50, that he would save four cities based on 40. Vahalo ra'uihu, three lines after I bracketed. Shiyu arba'im matzilin arba. It stands perfectly to reason that 40 will save four cities. Ushloshim v'ha etzrim, and 30 and 20, yatzilu l'fi cheshbon, will spare based on the number, ka'asher ha-chamishim yatzilu chamesh. Just like the city, all five will be saved as a result of 50, we know that if there are only 20, two will be saved. Yes?
Then why did he include 45?
That's his next question. Good. Good. The Ramban knows that you're here today, and therefore he just heard you. He's standing right over there, the Ramban. He's here with us. V'chein ma she'omar ki tish'a al yedei tziruf kvar bikesh v'lo matza. Avraham already knew the answer to 45. How do you work with 45? And Rashi said this as well. There were nine in each city. Nine in each city. And who is the tenth? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is the tenth one in each city. His presence alone. So Avraham already knew that. That what? Kvar bikesh v'lo matza. He knew that the answer was there weren't nine in each of the five cities, because if HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have responded to nine with what? With nine with him, then which number did Avraham not have to mention? Chamishim. Well, he didn't have to start with 50. He could have started with 45. But since he started with 50, the assumption is that what? There ain't no 45. There ain't nine in each city. So that whole number troubles the Ramban. What additional idea is contained there? And in fact, Rashi believes that he knows that nine didn't exist. How did Avraham know that nine didn't exist? Because after he got to 10, did he ask for 9? No. So Rashi said something in history already proved to Avraham that 9 are not around. How did he prove it? Because during the time of Noah, there were 8 righteous forces. 8. Noah, Shem, Ham, Yafet, and their wives. We only know one name of a wife, according to the Midrash. Naama was Noah's wife. So she is mentioned in the text in Sefer Bereshit. Never says that he is Noah's wife, but Rashi claims that, the Midrash claims that it's Noah's wife. We don't know any other people. And God decided to destroy the world with 8 and his presence. So he knew the answer to 9 already. So if he knew the answer to 9 already, why is Avraham asking if there were 9? 9's not going to work. And in fact, later on, we will see how did he get to think that there might have been 8 tzaddikim around at this time. At the time of Noah, we just said it's Noah, Shem, Ham, and Yafet. Who are the righteous people in this community? Who are they?
Lot.
What? Lot. Who else?
His
two daughters. That's and the what?
That's 4.
And then who else?
Lot's wife. I mean, she didn't turn out to be, but could be.
Okay, maybe Lot and each of their respective
spouses.
But that's crazy. Who's their spouse? We don't know who the daughter's spouses are. We know that they gave birth through having relations with Lot, but we don't know if they had any husbands or not. And even that's only 6. How does he know? Where do you know that there may have been 8 and that God's presence would be 9? Unless Avraham counted himself and Sarah as being there. Lot's uncle, he's around, he's right here. I'm also standing right here, right next to stone. And in fact, he went along. He did go to stone. So perhaps the Ramban is calculating this, that there were 8 already, God's presence is 9. So what's the whole rigmarole with 45? He's got his answer ready. Just like he never asked for 9, he should never have asked for 45. If you assume the ratio is accurate. 5 cities divided by 45 divided by 5 is 9. No, that doesn't work. That doesn't work. So I already answered that question. Why he didn't ask for 9. Remember what was the answer we said on that last pasuk? Why did we say that? I can't believe this is one of the most powerful things I ever told you. It's not mine, it was Rabbi Kanatopsky's. Avraham wanted to ask for 9. He wanted to ask for 3. He wanted to ask for 1. And what happened?
Hashem left.
The last pasuk of this unit, pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vayelech Hashem. God checked out when he was finished talking with Avraham. What do you mean he checked out? Never says this any place in Tanakh that when God finishes talking to somebody, he went. Only time in Tanakh. Vayelech Hashem. Because Avraham had one more question. Rabbeinu Shalom, you mean to tell me one tzaddik is going to die? And the answer, sometimes yes. That when God is, when the Malach HaMaves, when the Mashchit is coming around, the Mashchit is uncontrolled. Uncontrolled. Rashi himself says that in Parshat Bo. Why is it that God told each and every member of Am Yisrael not to leave their house on the night of Pesach? Ve'atem lo teitzu mipetach beito. No one was allowed to leave. Why? You mean to tell me God doesn't know the difference between between an Egyptian and a Jew? Of course he knows. Because once the Malach HaMaveh starts going, which the Torah calls the Mashchit, the Mashchit doesn't have such a capacity to discriminate. And when he's in the midst of the act of killing, he will kill anybody in his way. And therefore a Jew risked death by standing right outside his door. And therefore, V'atem lo teitzu mipetach beito. And what else supports that premise? What did God tell us to do with our homes? What did he do? Put the blood on the door. What's the matter? The Rabbeinu Shalom doesn't know who's inside? So I can't really explain it. I'm just saying the words. I don't know what it means that there is a mashchit independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I can't explain it. But the Torah supports that idea. That this mashchit is running loose and he might enter my house or your house unless there is a warning on the door that this is a Jewish home, and if you don't put the blood on the door, you can be the greatest tzaddik on the planet. A tzaddik in Pels, like we say. But you are going to die because that mashchit can't control himself. And that's why Abraham wanted to ask for 10, 9, 8, and 1. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I can't explain it to you. And therefore, Vayelech Hashem Ka'asher Kila L'Dabayim Abraham. Abraham, God leaves. He can't be present to hear that question because he doesn't have a satisfactory answer for mankind. But the Ramban doesn't know that yet, and therefore he's asking, So now.
If Malach HaMaveh is so out of control, why would that stop him? He can go through the door.
Okay, it's a good question. Why would the blood stop him? Yeah, it's a good question. So if I can't explain it, if I don't understand the original idea, I can't explain the details either. I just don't understand it. And I've never heard a really good explanation what it means. This mashchit is beyond HaKadosh Baruch Hu's control. He should go to wherever God assigns him. That's who the Malach HaMavis symbolically kills. Now, who's this Malach HaMavis? It's God who makes the decision whether people live or die, not a Malach HaMavis. Malachim are emissaries of God. That's all they do. They do God's good work and His dirty work. Yes.
The Hashchit also means to corrupt, doesn't it? And so it's not only to destroy. Could we also say that when death is loose in the land, it causes otherwise innocent people to be corrupted and to make themselves liable for punishment also?
That they That's become interesting idea.
In an atmosphere of violence and destruction.
Okay, I hear. I hear. It's a possibility. Okay, so that's a question which the Ramban asks. Let's move on. Go to page number 3, and Ibn Ezra introduces a brand new idea. Going back to the phrase Bitochair, says Ibn Ezra on the left hand side of the page, Bitochair, Shehem Yireim et Hashem Bifarhesia. When they're home, they do whatever they darn please. But in public, they respect and fear God. They respect and fear God in public. Why would anybody do that? Why would anybody do that? So we all know the answer. Why would somebody do that? Because you want to make a good impression with your neighbors. With all of the, you know, I'm a God-fearing individual. God-fearing individual. And Avraham was asking then, just one second, Avraham was asking, even if I'm dealing with a hypocrite, would you be willing to spare the people who at least in public don't want to generate the impression that they are disobeying your command? They are decent people. And one of the great things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu hates is people who are hypocrites. He hates that. Hates it. And here Avraham is asking, will HaKadosh Baruch Hu be willing to forgive simply if they are observant b'toch ha'ir? And we make reference to this on a couple of occasions. I remind you of Tisha B'Av morning. In one of the early keynotes which are recited, we make reference to Yoshiyahu HaMelech. Yoshiyahu HaMelech was one of the good guys. All of the Malkei Yisrael, 95% of them were bums, transgressors, murderers, idolaters. Just shocking how immoral and corrupt Malkei Yisrael were. Yoshiyahu was one of the few good ones. And yet, the destruction of the Mikdash took place all on his reign, just about. And the Paitan HaKalir says, Asherkam acharei hadelet lisdor. Asherkam acharei hadelet lisdor. The destruction came to make order for those people who were behind the doors. In other words, in public, they were never oivei avodah zarah. Now, but achorei hadelet, as soon as you were behind the doors, they worshipped avodah zarah, even during Yoshiyahu's time. And the Navi, according to Kalir, admonishes Yoshiyahu that you thought you were a really great guy. You know, he says,
I got rid of all avodah zarah. And he's laughing right at him. Sure, in public he did so. But behind the door, and in fact, where they used to make their images of avodah zarah was on the back wall. When the door opened, you came into the house, you didn't say anything. The door was hiding the avodah zarah image behind the door. And so he is poking fun, and the Churban HaMikdash, according to the Midrash cited by Kalir in that Kina, is highlighting that the hypocrisy that Am Yisrael exhibited during Yoshio's time was one of the primary causes of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. And that it was a stark lesson that Yoshiyahu learned and caused an enormous depression as a result of the fact that he thought he was one of the good guys. And apparently he wasn't as successful, If you open up to chapter 27 of Sefer Dvarim for a minute, I think it's Chav Zayin or Chav Chet, one of the two. Is it the all words?
Yeah, 28.
No, 27.
Error comes on.
Look at.
I'll tell you in a second. Hold on, I'll give it to you in a second.
Yes. Pasuk Tetvav. Pasuk Tetvav. So in this little unit, this is on Har Gerizim and Har Eval. Six tribes are standing on Har Gerizim, six on Har Eval. It's a nice tour to take one day when you're in Israel to go visit Har Gerizim and Har Eval. It's not on the normal tourist lists, but it's a good tour. And six tribes went up. Six tribes went up on the other side. And God declared brachot and klalot. He only lists in the Torah the klalot. But there were corresponding brachot. And it says, arur. What does Tetvav say? Good. Somebody who will what? Make an image, right? Visam basater. What does Visam Basater mean? He's going to put it in secret. Ah, nobody sees. Everybody thinks I deserve Mafta Yoina and Yom Kippur. I'm such a great guy, and so on and so forth. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I know very well who's doing this. And therefore, cursed shall be the person who places this Basater. Basata. And so many of these are much easier to violate when you do it basater, mashke iver. What does that mean? Mashke iver. You give bad advice to the blind. Doesn't mean necessarily blind. Means if you're a stockbroker and you hate this guy, so you give him information that what? Oh, this stock is going to take off. And you know very well it's going to collapse. That's Oru Mashker Iver Baderach. And that's something you do privately. If you were to put that information in public, write this in your stock report so that people read it, you'd never get away with it. But to tell one person, Baseter, so here also the Torah places its emphasis on people who engage in transgression, Baseter. Even though they might necessarily conduct themselves appropriately bifarhesia in public, but Avraham is asking, you know what, Rabbeinu Shel Olam, if somebody at least is interested in doing it bifarhesia, that speaks about that they have some concern about doing what is right. You know, even though they may not observe it privately, but at least you know that they think, and so they think it's okay. Yeah. Now, That's Ibn Ezra. Take a look at the Ramban on the right hand side of the page. So first he quotes Ibn Ezra, as he often does. Pirush Rabbeinu Avraham, Rabbi Shalhu Yureim et Hashem Befahesya. And he quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu that confirms that. Vahanachon be'einai. What do I think is the appropriate interpretation? Ki Avraham amar betocha ir lemor sha'afilu yihiyu nachrim betocha ra'ui shiyatziluha. Ve'amar ze ba'avur lot ve'chashav ulai yesh acherim sham. What is the Ramban's comment?
That Lot was
an Achri? Not necessarily, but he might be. But what, before we get to his, I don't know, what does the phrase mean? Afilu yu nachrim betocha. What does that mean?
People that do whatever behind closed doors.
Oh, no, that's Ibn Ezra's idea.
Maybe that's what he's referring to.
It's possible, but probably not. So what do you think he's focusing on? Who is in the public thoroughfare? Regular people. Nachrim are in the regular public thoroughfare. But if you find one tzaddik in the city, even though the general impression is that who are the residents of this town? The Nachrim, and who are not loyal and dedicated, but maybe there is somebody such as Lot. Now, Lot wasn't necessarily the greatest Jew in the world, but apparently in Avraham's eyes, he was a little more worthy. After all, that God sends an angel, one of the three angels that appeared to Avraham at the beginning of the Parsha, one of his tasks was to save Lot. So he couldn't have been such a bad guy. I'm not saying he wore a shtramel and a bekesher, but he couldn't have been such a bad guy. So Avraham's petition is, I know what you see, B'toch Ha'ir. I know what you see. You see all this evil. That's the normal, that's what anybody's going to come away with when they walk through the streets of stone. But you, Rabbeinu Shalom, will be able to know that there is one saving grace, or maybe 10. Who might they be? People like Lot. And would you now use the fact that there are such individuals, would you now be willing to spare them on account of Lot? Kacha lomed haramban. Yeah. Yes. No question. Yeah. Shari, you had a question? That is correct. Correct. The Torah itself says that many people came, and when he invited the two guests into his house, he was, yes, approached. We'll read it in the next parak, in Parakutet. Correct.
That maybe the text then points that out.
Yes. Could. Good. Yes. Finally, on page number 4, I want to show you a Kli Yakar. Now, I showed you the Ramban, who raised the question, why do I need all of these introductory prayers of Hina no ha'alti and blah, 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 blah. So he, Kli Yakar, has an answer for the Ramban. And he cites a halakha to establish his argument. I want you to look at line 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Line number 5, in the middle of the line, it starts at Ubedine Nefashot. Everybody have that?
Yes.
5 lines into the Kli Yakar, Ubedine Nefashot. Ubedine Nefashot Matchilin Min Hatzad. Min Hatzad. So let me tell you what this halacha is. In order to execute somebody in court, you need 23 judges.
Three judges suffice for monetary courts, but any time there's a capital punishment for the crime, you need 23 judges. Now, when the judges sit, they sit in a semicircle, and they do this in the Sanhedrin as well, and the bright ones sit right in the front, in the middle, and the next guy sits over there, the next guy sits over there, and if you ask a couple of stupid questions, you go move to the back. That's the way they went. If you ask an intelligent question, you moved up to the front, to the side, then you move it, eventually you get to seat the middle. Today, if somebody tried that as an educator, they would be fired. But at that time, that's the way they did. So, whenever capital cases were handled, who was the first one to speak up? Matrilin min hatzad. Let the least interesting or the least knowledgeable, the least sharp person open up his mouth first. Why? Because we want everybody to participate in a possible defense for the defendant. Everyone.
So he won't be intimidated.
Exactly. So if you start with the middle guy, the Rashka Bahag, everybody, oh, I'm not going to say anything against him, even though I think he got wrong. And that will decrease the possibilities of innocence. The halakha is always interested to promoting innocence, not guilt, in a court, in a case of capital punishment. Always. There are 50 halakhot designed to increase the chances of guilt as opposed to innocence. Innocence instead of guilt. I'll give you an example. If there are 23 dayanim, and we say the halakha is like the majority, how many dayanim do you need to acquit?
12.
12. In order to convict, we don't follow a simple majority. You need a majority of two. Well, in an odd-numbered court, that's impossible. So what do you need?
Three.
You need 13 to 10 in order to convict. 12 to 11 in order to acquit. 13 to 10 to convict. Why? Because we're looking to make life as easy as possible for conviction, actually for acquittal, and as difficult as possible for conviction. We don't want to lose a life unless we are 1,000% sure that this person is guilty. Says the Kli Yakar, Avraham is trying to make himself like the tzad. I am not really worthy. Anochi afar va'efer. I'm nothing but dirt, ashes. Rabbeinu Shalayla, al yichara. I'm nothing in compared to you. Don't get angry at me. I'm a little lowlife. But I have to speak first. Why do I have to speak first? Because I'm a little lowlife. If I don't necessarily succeed in convincing you, I'm going to have to call upon stronger defendants, other members of the court. Who might they be? In Abraham's times, Abraham plans, that's what he goes on to say, to ask Malachim to argue his case in the presence of the Rabbi Yishalayim. So why does Abraham belittle himself and come begging to HaKadosh? I'm just getting started, Rabbi. Please don't get angry at me. Why? Because he perceives himself as the tzad. And if I am on the tzad, the halacha is matchilim min hatzad. You have to start from the lowest ranking member of the Beit Din. Abraham says, that's exactly who I am. And as a result, he has this long song and dance introducing every time he says something and makes another request, he prefaces it with a statement to belittle himself and to highlight the fact that I, as the lowest member of the court, am pleading for you. If not, I'm going to have to sick upon you some of the stronger members of the court. Those are your own fellow angels who also are committed to tzedek and mishpat.
Yes.
Does the word ho'il come up anywhere else in Chumash?
Ho'il?
Because it has a completely different meaning in modern Hebrew.
Correct.
In sense,
of course. As opposed to that I'm starting.
Right.
I know.
I think that's been lost.
It's good.
Is it in the beginning?
I have to think.
Okay.
Have to think. All right. Rabotai, we'll stop here. We continue next Devach with Perek Yutet on its regular scheduled day of Wednesday.